All right, three,
two,
one, three,
two,
one. That sounds pretty much fine.
Okay.
I think we nailed it both times.
That's just the kind of guys we are.
I know, we're so good at it. It's going to be about 20 more seconds till the theme starts, and then...
Yeah.
Then we're fine. All right. 10 seconds. Hello there, everybody.
Hi, Evan.
Hi, Matthew. Could you speak up?
Hi, Evan.
Hi.
Hi.
This is the series regular. It's our television podcast.
Yes.
I'm Evan.
I'm Matthew.
And we're talking about the second half of Welcome to the NHK. It's the hottest, latest anime.
It's Evan's new favorite anime.
It's my new favorite anime.
It really turned around the second half.
That's true. So the whole time I was thinking, like, well, will the second half be what finally sells me on Welcome to the NHK? And I'm happy to report that yes.
It didn't just sell you. You bought it on DVD?
I have it on DVD.
You're holding it in your hand right now?
I have a Misaki body pillow.
Nice.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. Let's get right in here. Episode 13, Welcome to Heaven.
This is
the second part of the two-parter.
Yeah, I think this might be the worst episode of the show. This one's pretty bad.
It's pretty rotten. It's pretty rotten. Because basically... The whole thing is the offline meeting. It turned out to be a suicide pact. Whoa.
Yeah.
And then, so Misaki and Yamazaki and Hitomi's boyfriend.
Yeah.
All race to the island to try. I guess there was a note, like a suicide note, so he knows where they are.
Yeah.
And so they race to the island to try to stop them while the suicide pact...
Sato's getting all wrapped up in the suicide pact.
Well, yeah, it's just... The fucking Netflix description for this is so lame. It's like, oh, Sato's gotten wrapped up in a suicide pact. But they all, talk to one... Basically, it all amounts to, 8 minutes of television that are so ridiculously rushed and inexplicable that it really... I was very confused. Because what winds up happening is they're all about to jump off.
Yeah.
Then one of them decides, I can't do this, the doctor. And then you sort of get, backstory on all of them. Like the doctor... What was it? That he couldn't pursue his dream of being a doctor.
Yeah.
So, he...
You learn, the businessman or whatever, lost his, his wife divorced him and, has custody of their kid. And then you learn that, the 13-year-old stole money from his parents.
Yeah. So the 13-year-old who they took on this trip for reasons I don't know, was like, I stole money from my parents, and then there's a cut to a dramatic shot of him, like, removing money from a wallet.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and then like, one of them was like, it was those punks, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was punks threatening you, huh? And so, you learn all that, but then, like, God, it's so confusing. I can't even trace, like, the dramatic through line of this sequence. Like, the Misaki and all them show up, and initially Hitomi's gonna jump too.
Yeah.
And Sato's like, wait, don't do that. But then near the end, he's like, yeah, I'll jump with you. And then he goes back to, like, no, wait, don't do that. And then her, like, boyfriend appears and is like, Hitomi, let's get married. And she's like, oh, that's all I've ever wanted to hear. Which, really? That's how you're going to handle this?
And then Sato's like, well, now I'm going to jump.
Yeah, well, then Sato's like, what? You're getting married? Guess I should kill myself. At which point Misaki, like, yells at him not to, and then, like, the back row of people who are going to kill themselves start, like, cracking jokes.
Like, yeah.
That was the thing that really bothered me, was, like, the doctor guy at one point says, is that supposed to keep him off the ledge or make him jump? It's like, what?
Yeah, and, like, when like, Yogasaki convinces, like, Hitomi not to jump, it's, like, really comical how Sato's like, that's it, I'm gonna kill myself. It's like, yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all.
Yeah, no, it's awful. Yeah.
The dialogue is also, like, at its, it's just, it's really bad at, like, trying to give these people, like, character in the span of, like, 10 minutes. Because they're all, you know, it's just really blunt about it. And, yeah.
Yeah.
No good.
Yeah, no good. And also, it basically makes that arc kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
Because none of them... Basically, all of them just decide, hey, maybe we don't want to die. But, you know, not Sato. Sato is still like... Well, the frustrating thing is Sato initially goes in as the one person who doesn't want to die.
Yeah.
And then, like... throughout it, he slowly becomes, like, the one most convinced that he wants to die, and then in the next episode, Welcome to Reality, he's also, like, the only person whose life doesn't get improbably better after this experience, which just makes it feel even more contrived, like...
Yeah.
Like, he's stumbled into this suicide pact where nobody dies and everybody gets happy except him.
Yeah.
Like, what? So yeah, I'm going to give Welcome to Heaven a D.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a D too.
Welcome to Reality is... So it's fun because they're all back. They're all back from their suicide pact. They go to a hot springs.
Yeah.
Where, this
actually,
one's pretty
this
bad
might be
too.
The part of... As far... This is, like, equally as bad.
Yeah, so...
Because... Yeah.
Yeah, so they go... Basically, here's what the Wikipedia description claims about this episode. Their loved ones come and show them that their lives mean something. So there you go.
Yeah, like, the kids' parents come and they're like, how could you let this 13-year-old go into the suicide pact? And he's like, no, stop it. It's all my fault.
Yeah, the kid is, like, trying to claim it's his fault. And then, like, okay, the single most ridiculously, like, awful moment of anything in Welcome to the NHK happens in this episode.
Yeah.
Which is, basically, everybody's a little bit happier. This is also the episode that introduces the fucking MMO addiction plotline.
Yeah.
But, Sato is walking outside, everybody's, like, you know, talked with their parents, and, like, you know, they've made amends with it. It's like everybody's happier except him. And so it's just him and the businessman walking out. And suddenly the businessman's son appears. And the businessman's like, son, what are you doing here? And his son says, Mom told me to come out here. She said we should give it another shot. And then it is, like, the fucking corniest soap opera, like, slow push into his teary-eyed face. It is... It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. I thought this show was dark. The darkest thing it can do, it has to bail out of and then make everybody happy afterward.
Yeah, like it had, except its main character.
Except its main character, because fuck him, right? He can't get happy till the end. I hate it so much. More than anything, this is just a really tedious episode. Like, nothing really happens.
There's, like, that part where the guy comes in and is like, if you had committed suicide, I would have been super selfish. And then he goes on, like, a tirade about how selfish that would have been. And they're like, oh, I see.
It also is, I'm very confused about what it's trying to say about, like, suicidal people.
Yeah.
Or, because essentially, what they find, between that extended sequence about how, like, killing yourself is so selfish, and what were you guys thinking, and also the part where basically they all, like, think about their parents and then don't do it, and then afterwards their lives get way better. Like, that's not... This show's relationship with whether or not it considers depression, like, a medical condition or, like, a really easy-to-fix psychological condition is very confusing to me. Because there are points at which it would seem to suggest that it does view it as, like, a medical condition that's really hard to sort of crack that nut. But then there are other times in this episode where really people stop being depressed, like, at the drop of a hat, and then the show rewards them, like
good job.
Incredibly for stopping being depressed, whereas our character is not rewarded, our main character. And it's just a really weird, like, I don't know what... I feel like this show...
Like, maybe if they'd rewarded him, that would have made some amount of sense.
Maybe. I mean, I just don't... It's just such a weird idea to, like, bring in a plot line involving a suicide pact out of thin air with characters we've never met before.
Yeah.
And then dispel it in that way, where all of them realize that their lives are worth living, and then, like, Mom says we should give it another shot! And then, like, that's just it. They just leave. Like, yeah. Hitomi basically isn't in the rest of the show. Like, that's the end of her.
Yeah, she's in one episode after this.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I'm gonna give this one a D, too.
Yeah, I agree. It's part of the same.
It's part of the same issue. Welcome to the fantasy.
So, this is when Sato gets the bright idea to start gold farming. For real money. Trading. RMT.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, we've been through the hentai thing.
Yeah.
Right? I guess we've been through the suicide pact thing. Now it's time to go through their MMO thing. They basically decide... Welcome to the NHK is like, how else can we... you know what, I'm not going to give them any credit. How else can we make fun of our depressed protagonist? And they discover a good way to do that is by having him get addicted to a massively multiplayer online role-playing game called Ultimate Fantasy. Under the guise of he's gonna try to sell the items in the game for real money to make, like, a profit.
Yeah.
But then eventually he just becomes addicted to the MMO, and then there's, like, a part...
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
Well, this episode is just sort of identical to the porn, like, the first porn addiction episode.
Yes.
Just, it doesn't end with him taking pictures of little girls.
Yeah, it just ends with...
Then it goes to, like, the next part.
Yeah.
Which ends slightly differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. A lot of those beats are basically the same. Like, Yamazaki comes over and says, "You're not working on the game."
And then Sato's like, I'm playing Ultimate Fantasy.
Yeah,
and then Masaki's like, what's going on with Sato?
He
brushes her off.
Yeah, well, hang on.
Yeah.
Because most of the... I feel like most of the stuff in this... Is this the episode where... Yeah, okay, that's right. Basically, it is, like you said, beat for beat the porn addiction thing. To the point even where Yamazaki comes over, says all that stuff, and then, like, you see he hasn't, like, eaten for days, and, like, he's got a beard.
Yeah.
And, like, there are a lot of really foreboding shots of him in his apartment, like, lit only by his computer monitor. Here's the other thing about this. Whenever this happens to him, like, suddenly a bunch of garbage bags appear in his apartment. How is that happening? Because yeah. I thought the idea is he isn't leaving the chair. Does he, like, when he knows he's gonna do this, does he go, like, take all of the shit from his apartment, put them in garbage bags, and throw them around? Because clearly wouldn't that... I mean, that would be more sanitary than just leaving rotting food out.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a dumb episode.
C-.
I'm gonna give it a D+, because I was especially offended by the... By the audacity this show would have to continue to act as if it's really deep or insightful and bounce from hentai game to MMO.
Yeah.
I was pretty fucking frustrated.
No,
So at the end of that episode, it continues into this one, Welcome to the Game Over. It's all about this cat girl he meets in the game called Mia. And I came so close to guessing this twist.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I came so close. I did guess most of the spirit of the twist.
Yeah, you just didn't guess the specific... He thought, okay, so at the end of the episode, it turns out Mia is being controlled by Yamazaki.
And the whole thing is, like, he's starting to be in, like, this virtual relationship with Mia, this cute, like, cat girl in the game. And so the whole time I was like, okay, well, they're going to, like, meet in real life. And then it's going to turn out to be, like, a great big old fat guy. Because that's what Welcome to the NHK is operating at right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out instead that she's actually being controlled by Yamazaki, who did that to try to ruin MMOs for him by showing him that, like, virtual love isn't real. Which, I mean, I guess makes sense. It feels pretty fucking contrived to me, at least. But, look. I'm not here to judge. Well, actually, I am here literally to judge. That's what we do on this show. But, so that part is, whatever, pretty predictable.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly predictable, at least, that there is a guy controlling Mia...
That is not a girl.
Who is a girl in the game and not a girl in real... I mean, it was predictable because it's just the thing it's the joke people have made about those games for as long as they've existed. Like, most of the things that Welcome to the NHK has to say about, like, these hikikomori trappings are, like, so rote. Like, and they're so fucking pleased with themselves for making them, too. You can tell because they often have characters, like, shout the points that they're trying to make as if they're deep or subtle, and they're not.
Sato, MMORPGs are not good!
Yeah. They'll ruin your life, and then there's that part where it, like, imagine who you'll be in, like, 30 years, and then it cuts to, like, a really, like, fat Sato sitting alone in his room, like, eating potato chips, and I was pleased with that because I initially posited that the person playing Mia would be really fat and eating potato chips, and it turned out that actually that image, they couldn't pass it up, they just made it Sato's vision of himself in the future, which is, you know, if you play MMOs, you don't magically get fat. That's not something that happens.
Are you kidding me?
I'm sure a lot of, like, pretty healthy people have played MMOs.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other thing about this that really fucking rubbed me the wrong way was the Misaki stuff.
Because she's like, I gotta dress up as, like, a cat girl.
Yeah, it's literally just Misaki, like, objectifying herself to get his attention, and it doesn't work, and that's the whole thing. That's it. It's like she initially puts on, like, cat girl ears, and it's like, hey, Sato, look at me, I'm a cat girl. And he's like, fuck you. And then she shows up later, like, in a fucking schoolgirl uniform. She's more decked out, and he still doesn't notice. And at that point in the series, I'm already like, you guys aren't treating Misaki very well. So that last little kick in the pants was pretty, rough.
Fair enough.
I'm going to give this one a, a D plus.
Okay.
Because I think this two-parter, slightly less offensively terrible than the last two.
Yeah.
Though the MMO aspect of it is super bad.
Yeah.
What are you giving it?
C-.
Okay.
Welcome to Happiness.
All right, so this starts like a new arc, basically. Yeah. This starts the pyramid scheme arc, which the more I think about, the less I have any, like, interest in.
Sure.
Or at least, because I'm not against the idea of them getting involved in a pyramid scheme, mm-hmm. but, like, half of this episode, or half of this two-parter, is basically, like, is basically them explaining what a pyramid scheme is.
Yeah.
And then the other half is just the characters being ridiculously stupid in buying into the pyramid scheme.
I think that, you know, it's sort of simple, but it's sort of funny at parts, but it's all predicated on the fact that, like, Sato, Misaki, and Yamazaki are, like, fucking idiots.
Right, it's like, they sit down and they're like, we're gonna unsubscribe from the pyramid scheme, and then, like, the lady, Megumi, just says some, like, really obviously manipulative pyramid scheme stuff, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'll take 50! You know, like, it's...
yeah.
Like, there's no... You don't feel them getting won over. It's just, like, she says magic words, and then they get... And then, inevitably, like, on the train ride home, they're like, oh, we fucking did it again! And then they start having conversations as if they can't control themselves. Like, what if we just go back and she convinces us to buy more into the pyramid scheme? And it's like, how am I supposed to give a shit about characters this stupid? Like, full stop.
Yeah, because it's like... That's a serious concern. Like, they have to go to her house to make sure that she's in a position where she'll just trick them again.
Yeah, like, they eventually confront her at her house because that way she can't say that she left, like, the application cancellation form at home. Mm-hmm. Like, that's their logic, and it's like, really? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? This isn't how pyramid schemes work. If pyramid schemes worked that well, we would all be in debt.
Yeah.
Every one of us, because a person...
We would all be part of the pyramid scheme.
Yeah. A person would walk up to you, be like, hey, I got this pyramid scheme, and then dollar bills would flash in your eyes, and you'd be like, yeah, give me 50. And then that would happen to every person on Earth. The reason pyramid schemes are easy to joke about is because they only sucker in, like, the rubiest of rubes.
Yeah.
Which, and I thought, man, I thought at least Misaki maybe had a little more awareness than that.
Yeah, because she goes and buys the book, but then, I guess, doesn't read it at all before talking to these
people.
Well,
yeah, she buys a book that's like, how to avoid pyramid schemes. And then it seems like she reads parts of it, but it just doesn't matter. Like, they just fall victim to the pyramid scheme again. The first episode is basically... him just going to the pyramid scheme place and then, like, having a confrontation with her outside about it. And
He, like, meets, like, an old, like, person he knew in high school. And then she's like, yeah, come to this pyramid scheme. Then he's like, and then he says in the back half, he's like, well, you think I'm fucking stupid? I know what a pyramid scheme is. And then she tricks him into buying into the pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
So that's the first part.
The second, well, that's the whole episode, so, I guess, C. What was that?
I'll give that a C.
I'm gonna give it a C-.
Okay.
This next one I'm gonna give a D+.
Okay.
Because this is the one where they keep repeatedly getting tricked into buying into the pyramid scheme, and it was really frustrating to watch. Yes.
I'll throw it a C-. And now we're on to the the last quarter of Welcome to NHK.
Yes.
So at the end of the 18th episode of Welcome to No Future, they go to her house, and they like force themselves in so that like she'll.
I mean, this isn't really. This is still kind of the pyramid scheme arc.
Yeah, yeah. I just said this is the last six episodes.
Oh, the last six episodes.
That's all I meant, yeah.
Sure.
And she's like, she tells them about how the corporation, like Mouse Road, which is the pyramid scheme, like, she was desperate, so she turned to them, and then, like, she got into a bunch of debt, even though she's, like, a regular member or whatever. And then you also learn about her brother, who's, like, really addicted to MMOs, and that's how she learned about Sato in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so, like, Sato talks to him, and he's like, you have to stop being a hikikomori, or else you'll become like me, unable to do anything about it. Then, like, a month passes... Misaki has been, like, feeding... Because the whole reason he went to his pyramid scheme to begin with was because his parents, like, cut his allowance in half.
Yes.
Or why he even started the MMO stuff.
Yes.
So, he's being fed by Misaki, and he asks her, like, she's like, what was that corporation called again? He's like, oh, I think... And then on the television, it's like, Mouse Road has been shut down! So, like, then it transitions to, like, it transitions to, like, the person, Megumi, like, she gets sent to jail, so her brother, like, was, like, so hungry, like, crawled to this ramen shop, and then he was, like, fed by them, and now he delivers, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a... It's a little silly how the people in the ramen shop talk about him.
Yeah, that's one of, like, the clunkiest dialogue sequences in this whole show.
Yeah.
Is that there's a part, because he leaves, and then, like, they start talking to each other about him, but in such blatantly, like, expository terms for the audience that don't make any sense, given that they're the two people who know what happened.
Yeah.
They're
like, oh, that boy, don't you remember when he came into this shop? He was starving.
I don't know. I feel like this is kind of a nothing episode.
It's fine that I'm trying to give more character to, like, the main person in these three episodes, but it's not groundbreaking, and, like,
I especially don't really understand the stuff with him getting hired at the ramen shop, because this is, like, the last episode either of them are involved in.
Yeah.
And that feels like maybe it's the door-opening moment for more dynamics, but it just ends, so I don't...
Yeah.
I'll give this one a C-.
Okay, I'll give it a C.
Hmm.
Alright, now we're at...
The Matthew Malusky inflation.
The Matthew Malusky inflation.
Matthew McCoolsky inflation.
Follow me at Matt McCoolsky.
You'll have to say it right if it's your Twitter handle.
Alright. Episode 20, Welcome to Winter Days.
So this is the start of the final arc, basically.
Yeah.
These last five episodes, and... So Yamazaki's father gets sick, which means Yamazaki decides that he's gonna go back to, like, their farm. Where I guess his family planned his life.
Yeah.
Like, he talks about how freaked out he was because they, like, planned out the ages at which he'd, like, get arranged married and then have a kid and stuff. And he's like, I didn't want to do that. I'm independent. But then he just goes back. they finish their game and they get it to the winter, like, comics festival or whatever.
Well, specifically in this episode, he's like, Sato, we gotta, like, finish this game, and because maybe if it does well, then, like, I'll be able to, like, I think his plan is, like, he'll be able to support his family that way or whatever.
Right. Oh, this is the one with the fucking scene with Nanako. Okay.
Yeah, so
God,
they get drunk.
I don't get that scene at all.
Yeah, they get drunk. He calls up Nanako, and then he, like, reveals to her that, like, he's, like, way into like, hentai and otaku
well,
shit.
Well, yeah, basically the whole thing seems like it's going okay up front. Like, and Sato's videotaping it from, like, behind a curtain, which makes it extra
weird. Yeah, which they
weird.
Say is for getting a reference for a female reaction.
But that doesn't make any sense. Because their game isn't about... Their game isn't about the females in the game, like, hating the protagonist.
Yeah,
like, that's not... So he's videotaping
them.
That part's
just kind of weird. It just feels like Sato just needs to be there.
Yeah, but why? Like, what does this achieve? Because what happens is he sets up, like, blankets, and he pulls all of them off, revealing all of his, like, hentai doll, like, anime stuff.
Yeah.
And then she's like, look, you know, I find all this stuff kind of gross, but you're dedicated to it, and I really admire that about you. At which point, he twists the knife in even deeper, and she punches him and leaves.
Yeah.
So I don't really get what... Is it just a scene that's meant to confirm to me that Yamazaki is still one of the worst?
Well, I think the intent of the scene was, like, he wanted to break it off of her because he probably knew that, like, the game wasn't actually going to do that well, and, like, hey, this is, like, a cool way to break up with someone, I guess. This is, like, an interesting way to break up with someone.
Because the game wasn't going to do well?
Yeah.
Why does he care about that in regards to his relationship?
Well, because, I mean, he clearly likes Nanako, so I think, like, the point is, like, he figured he's going to have to break up with her if he has to move back.
Oh, the moving back. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Right.
But it's...
So, in other words, yes, it is meant to confirm to me that he's still an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Didn't need to be reminded. The whole arc of him leaving is so heavily dependent on, like, me feeling any trace of sympathy for the fact that he's gone. And that is not something you can convince me of, welcome to the NHK.
That's a tall order.
That is a tall order, because he is the fucking worst. I am having trouble recalling a character in a thing that I have hated as seethingly as him.
He's pretty awful.
Like, every aspect of his character, the way he was introduced, which was just really stupid, like, stereotypical message board, like, internet speak, and then when that peeled back even further to reveal, like, his weird misogyny, like, it just,
Default mode of interaction is to yell at, like, Sato and Misaki.
Yeah, with, like, no self-awareness and really no, like... I don't...
There is maybe, like, a paragraph of text in the whole show where he's, like, complimenting either of them.
This show might be, like, a full letter grade better without him in it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe.
Or even if he was just... I think if he was just, you know, handled with some tact, it could have been fine.
But what tact? What tact is there? They've made such a ridiculously and cartoonishly repulsive character.
Right. I mean, like, scale that shit back a little.
Okay.
That's all I meant.
Right. So if he was
completely different.
He would be a good character if he was an entirely rewritten character.
Hey, just calling it how, like, I see it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'm gonna give this one a D+, because...
Okay.
I mean, it's the...
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing as before, where it's just alternating between me supposed... Like, I have to feel bad that he's leaving, or something. And then, like, the breakup scene was just even more... Just like, why are you doing this to her? What is this?
Yeah.
And also, his whole thing is, like, remember in episode 13 when it's like, we don't deserve a dramatic death? Why the fuck does that change with breakups?
Yeah, no, that... Yep. I agree.
Jesus Christ. This goddamn show.
I'll join you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome to the reset. This is the part of Welcome to the NHK where it's after the shakeup, they kind of reset. So they finish their game. They take it to the comics festival thing. It sells like 5 copies, and then basically they're like, well, fuck, I'm out of ideas. Which is, once again, I don't know how the Japanese hentai game market works. I'd certainly hope that it's not just go to a festival and however many copies you sell there are however many copies you sell, period. Because that seems
a little fucked.
That seems a little fucked in a, let's say, not real way.
Yeah.
That sounds a little fucked in a, let's say, the people writing this show don't know how the internet works kind of way. But, hey, that's fine. Their game doesn't sell very well. It's just, I'd even be willing to let it go if they doubled down on it.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't sell enough to make this profitable. But they even say, like, we sold 5 copies. There's still hope if the people who bought those copies go on the internet and advertise it for us. And it's like, why aren't you going on the internet and advertising for you?
Yeah.
So then they decide it's a failure. Not very good. There's, like, a narration where Sato's like, well, I was making it. I thought our game was going to be the best thing ever. But now I play it, and it's just kind of bad.
Yeah.
So that's good. He leaves. That's what happens in this episode, basically.
Yeah. He leaves, and he's like, damn.
He's like,
and then,
damn.
And then there's, like, a scene where he's like, oh, man, what if I think I'm the only person left in the world?
Yeah, which, once again, is one of those potentially interesting psychological tics that they dispense with in about 2.5 minutes when he goes out and meets Misaki.
Yeah. So the rest of this episode is Misaki being like, all right, so we're going to do a final exam for the year.
Yes.
And you're going to come with me to Shibuya on New Year's Eve. Then he's walking with her. He panics. He runs into, like, an alley. And then, like, Hitomi, like, finds him. And that's where the episode ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The New Year's Eve Shibuya part of this is sort of frustrating in light of how cool he was going to Akihabara in episode 4.
Yeah, it's...
And the excuse being that, like, he was being forced to, that's why it was fine, or he was with someone else, that's why it's fine, are both true in this instance. And he's still a lot more visibly upset than he was then, which is, you know, once again, just psychological disorders are nothing but the writer's plaything.
Yeah.
Let's not take him seriously, let's just crop him up when they need crops zin up. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this one a D+.
Okay. I'm giving it a C-.
That inflation.
That inflation.
Episode 22.
Welcome
to God.
There you go.
So they spend... So basically, Sato meets up with Hitomi.
Mm-hmm.
During New Year's Eve, at which point Sato spends a bunch of time thinking about them, like, getting down.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
There's a pretty good part where, in, like, Misaki, the whole episode is, like, trying to find him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a pretty kind of weird part where he and Hitomi are, like, sitting, and then, like, she orders them a bottle of sake, and then... the waiter's like, I smell a big tip.
Yeah, that was a really good... That was an instructive sequence for how, like, Welcome to the NHK, when it veers... Occasionally it's true of the characters, but when it veers out of its stable of, like, 4 characters, it really doesn't know how people talk. Because, yeah, she orders the sake, and then you just see... You just hear off-screen, I smell a big tip. Like, what? That's not what that's not what a waiter says. What? So yeah, they hang out basically the whole episode, and Misaki gets upset.
Because she just sees them together, and they're, like, outside, like, a love hotel.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, because she's into Sato.
Yeah.
Somewhat, even with the context of the ending inexplicably. There's really not much reason for her to be so into Sato beyond just
Yeah.
I guess the fact that she is, which would be fine if I found Sato to be a more endearing or compelling character.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole thing is just they. So then he lies about it to her, and then she gets all depressed and starts talking about how, like, if God exists, he's evil. That yeah. kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, I don't.
I think this episode's fine.
I guess. I mean, I don't. It just, it's weird. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The, because at this point I've made peace with the fact that the sole two female characters on this show basically revolve around Sato.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least exist to make Sato do different stuff or feel differently. And I've leveraged that criticism in the past. We don't need to retread that. But the fact that Hitomi in this show really just shows up randomly and, like, really by chance, like, it's a giant, there are a lot of people at New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And they just bump into each other because they need this plot line to occur, and it just feels really clumsy to me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the same thing happened every time they've met in the past. Like, it's just been, like, the two of them randomly run into each other in Tokyo. Or there's the one time she came to his house. That's fair. But the other times have just been, like, random happenstance. And then having Misaki get so hung up on it is weird, too, because it's like, I guess what we're supposed to believe is just that she's really into Sato, and it feels bad that he's not into her. I guess.
Right.
But I just don't feel like they've laid the groundwork well for that at all, beyond making her, like the perfect girl for Sato. Like, I have no sense of understanding as to why she would like Sato, beyond the mm-hmm. fact that we only ever see her when she's trying to help Sato, and she doesn't really have much defining personality beyond trying to help Sato, and etc.
Right.
Which makes the whole conflict of it hinging on their relationship, I think, not work for me, because neither Hitomi nor Misaki feel like they have much say in the matter, or much agency as characters. They sort of feel like cogs in the great big Sato relationship machine.
Yeah, Hitomi just doesn't, she's just not in, like, hardly any episodes.
Yeah.
In, like, a present time sense.
And she doesn't really do anything. Like, the thing she yeah, comes closest.
Yeah, she'll just, like, mention conspiracies, and then.
Yeah, she mentions conspiracies a lot, and then the thing she comes closest to doing is killing herself, and she doesn't. So, yeah, in short, not my favorite episode. Not the mm-hmm. worst episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not the worst one, certainly. Not the best one. I'm gonna give this. Yeah. A C minus.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a C.
Okay. Episode 23, Welcome to Misaki.
Okay.
So, this episode...
So, yeah.
You can say something.
Well, this is sort of where we learn a lot about... after not really giving us much more than, like, a smidgen of background on her, we get sort of an information dump on Misaki this episode, in the first half anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end. It starts with, like, Misaki and, like, Sato, like, meet up in the park, and, like, she's, like, giving him a quiz on, like, the dying words of famous people.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they, like, talk about, like, people that commit suicide. Then she's like, okay, so we're going to have a graduation exam, and at the end of this exam, you're going to sign this new contract, which basically says you need to, like, hang out with me constantly.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I don't want to do that. And she, in turn, freaks out a little. Then he, like, freaks out, and then he heads home, and then he, like, without any support from her, and when his mom cuts off his money entirely, then he essentially sort of repeats what the ramen guy did, and, like, he like crawls from his house and like he finds like this traffic control job or whatever, and mm-hmm. then he starts working for like a month probably. And then like he sees that like there was some sort of ambulance at like her house, so he goes there and then he heads to the hospital, and then like the uncle that's there was like, yeah, she had like an unstable mother and abusive stepfather. Mm-hmm. And then he notices that like she leaves a note saying
suicide note.
She's gonna like kill herself where like her mom died.
Yeah, basically. At, like, this jetty. He figures that out on his own. That's not explicitly stated.
Yeah.
But
you get the idea.
Yeah, so, okay, first thing I thought watching this episode mm-hmm. was that I really hated the part where she tries to get him to sign the thing, mm-hmm. the new thing, because it was like, it was the most the show has ever dipped into, like, the idea of this show just being sort of a power fantasy for, like, shy teenagers.
Right.
Because the extent of that sequence was in narrative terms like a pretty girl being really being so into you that she gets so upset that you have decided that, you know, you're not good enough for her, and you walk away like into the shadows. Mm-hmm. And it was so fucking it's like the worst, like, fever dream of, like, the right mix of self-aggrandizement and self-deprecation, where it's like, oh, you know, she's really into me because I'm secretly awesome, but also I'm so self-deprecating that I can't do this. I just gotta walk away. Mm-hmm. And I have very little patience for that sort of thing, especially when it concerns a character who's been so summarily robbed of character.
Yeah.
And then I guess I felt kind of similarly about the reveal that you know, she has, like, an abusive stepfather and stuff, because I don't...
It just feels like too little too late.
It feels like too little
too late.
It feels
that stuff definitely feels tacked on.
And I think the degree to which it is rushed sort of makes it kind of gross, too. Like,
yeah, just that sort of material you kind of need to...
You need to be...
Give some room for.
Yeah, you need to give some room, you need to have some tact, and to just say that, like, oh, the reason she's been doing this the whole time is because she's depressed, too, is fine. I mean, that seems to be what they're getting at, or driving yeah. at, is the idea that, like, oh, the reason that she's been so invested in trying to help Sato is because she needs to be close to someone, too.
Yeah, and then he's the only person that she figured would interact with her.
Would be, you know, willing to, like, need her. Yeah. Which isn't a bad concept. It's not a great one. It is not great in light of how they've handled the character up to this point.
Yeah, I get the impression they had that idea in mind from the start, because mm-hmm. there's sort of that, like, that way back when he went to, like, Yamazaki's, like, graphic design school, she, like, mentioned that, like, the way to, like, get through is to, like, always look down on other people and, like, put them lower than you, which
yeah.
would seem to be, like, what her relationship with Sato was for her.
Yes.
Which is kind of clever, but it's, like... That happens, like, once or twice before episode 23. Like, it's just not...
Right. It's not... I mean, it's not enough, and it's... And I yeah. think the fact that it's not enough makes some of the specifics of, like, her being sort of, like, a battered and abused person feel more like a plot contrivance than anything, and that's always bad.
Yeah.
That's definitely. Never good when, like, child abuse is used as a plot contrivance.
Yeah.
So... Because I can respect the fact they want to make this, like, a twist, but in thinking over the show, it was probably exactly the wrong idea.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't have tried to preserve this as, like, a gotcha moment or whatever.
Yeah.
Because...
Like, if they wanted to try, like, that... Yeah, because it would have been, like... This would have been a pretty good point at which to, like, maybe she could have revealed this stuff during the suicide attempt... And, like, if that attempt had gotten more, like, grounding, that could have been mm-hmm. sort of an interesting turn. But it's, like, you know, it's not... as is, it's just not.
Yeah.
It's not really a good implementation of that stuff.
I agree. I'm going to give this one.
I think this, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to give this one a C-.
Yeah. I'll give it a C.
Matthew Malusky inflation.
I can't stop.
You can't stop inflating yourself.
All right. Last episode. Welcome to the NHK.
Here we are. We've come a long ways. And now here we are. God damn it, Snowy, stop barking. Can you hear that?
No.
Okay. That's good, because that means it probably won't be on the recording. But Snowy has basically been barking for the last 15 minutes straight.
That's great.
So, it's great. It's because there's a gardener outside.
And he hates those.
Well, he's trying to alert me that there's danger.
Yeah.
Episode 24 is called Welcome to the NHK, which I'm torn about because I can envision a show in which this is a really good finale.
Yeah.
I don't think it's this show.
I still think it's probably one of the best episodes of the show.
It's probably the best one. I mean, in a pure mechanical sense, it's the best episode. It doesn't have as many glaring issues as the other episodes.
Yeah.
But
it's certainly written a little better.
Sure. I just can't.
No, it's just it's the sort of, I don't want to compare the show to Hannibal, but Hannibal season one ended pretty well.
Sure.
But it was ultimately kind of like, well.
Right.
What does it matter if the rest of your show is just sort of average to.
Yeah, and that was especially. Actually, that's not a bad comparison, because in that season, my chief complaint was that they were essentially trying to say in the finale that they had set up something with more care and delicacy than they had. They were essentially lying to the viewer.
Yeah.
They were trying to, like, trick them into thinking that this was, like, a house of cards tumbling down, when really it wasn't. It was, like, a house of cards they built an episode ago tumbling down.
Yeah.
And that's also sort of true of this finale. A little less glaringly so than Hannibal. I like Welcome to the NHK more than I like Hannibal, obviously. But I can't. Because the most of the episode is them at the place where her mom killed herself, sort of both. They both attempt to kill themselves and fail. They kind of save each other. Sato saves her. Sato then hits like a suicide net.
Yeah,
that was put up, and I think that scene is. I mean, it's pretty good. It's the writing's pretty good. It's the sort of writing I wish was in the whole show.
Yeah.
And I like. It's the first time I feel like his sort of narration, like psychological breakdown, has ever really worked.
Yeah, because he's like, oh man, this is kind of like a silly plan, but like, hey, I don't have a better one.
Yeah.
It works.
It's, yeah, that stuff is fine. You know, I just don't, I felt sort of betrayed, because I felt like there were things about it that worked for me emotionally in a way the rest of the show had entirely left me cold.
Right.
But I also feel like that's not, like, it shouldn't, because intellectually I can totally see how this doesn't work. Like, it's not a show that sets this up well at all,
yeah.
And just because they sort of stick the landing doesn't make any of the setup any better.
Yeah.
But, you know, for what it's worth, I think it's, like, a decent conclusion. There's some weird stuff with messaging, like there has been throughout the show, specifically in the way that, like, the end of the show seems to be about how, you know, they're still broken people, but they're broken together, and that's what brings them joy. But then, like, also Hitomi and Yamazaki are just, like, fine. Like,
yeah, because
so,
they're like, we're doing great. And it's like, you probably didn't need that.
Yeah, so, like, they send him postcards saying, like, it's, I feel so much better now that we're, you know,
well,
we're
and,
married.
And, well, actually, now that I think about it, they're, well, okay, at least in Yamazaki's case, mm-hmm. that would maybe be kind of, it would kind of go along with it since he, like, he meets, like, his fiance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say that, like, that would sort of go along with that.
What do you mean?
Like, if he meets a person that he liked in the same way that, like...
Right, but it's also, like, a whitewashing of his initial issues with the... The weird thing yeah. about Yamazaki is that this plotline is introduced where he's like, I was really fucking creeped out, as most people would be, by the fact that, you know... It's there's a list of things. It's like at 27 I have to get married, and at 32 I have to have my first child, and then at 64 I retire. But then yeah. after he actually goes there, he seems pretty on board with it.
Yeah.
Like, basically, he goes back, and then he's like, actually, arranged marriages? Yeah, pretty good. I kind of like the girl. I'm yeah. doing great. So, yeah. I don't. Also, I don't want... Yeah. I also don't want Yamazaki to find happiness.
Fair enough.
I'd rather this show ended with him dying in, like, a car crash. That would be good. And then the Hitomi thing is similarly, like, we got married, and now everything's cool.
I have a kid. Hi.
Which is, it's weird that those threads are positioned in such a universally positive light, because it starts with, like, him in his bed, and he's like, man, why they gotta send me these? Everybody's doing so much better than me.
Yeah.
And then, like, he rolls out of bed, and he goes to his job, and then he meets up with Misaki, and, like, they have a good time together. And then he's like, you know, I'm not gonna let it bug me anymore, the depression. And that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
Which is not, once again, it's not a bad resolution. It just doesn't really feel like...
It doesn't feel as earned.
If the theme of the show is that, yeah. you know, depression is hard to conquer by yourself, and maybe it won't go away if you hang out with people you like, but it'll help, that's cool. Yeah. That's a cool, you know,
yeah.
thing. But, like, none of the... This is the show where the guy...
I actually like that sort of visual stuff where they have, like the NHK mascots or whatever, like... on, like, his alarm clock or, like,
sure.
on his shoes. And, yeah.
Sure. No, it's good. It's smart. Yeah. It's just that, you know, this is the show where a guy pulls back from jumping off a cliff and then his son says, Mom says we should give it another shot. Like, there's...
No, I know.
Like, really, and it even in the same episode with the Yamazaki and the Hitomi stuff, it feels like in this universe they're positing that these are the two most broken people and this is really the only... This is their only recourse, yeah. which is a little more fucked in terms of messaging than if it was just like, you know, we've met a lot of people who have to deal with their own problems in their own ways, and this is our way, when yeah. in reality, basically everybody else who's had a problem has just, like, fixed it.
Yeah.
Like, which is... I don't understand how you write that show with this ending. I don't understand how the people who could have wrote that ending wrote the rest of the show.
Yeah, it's a little...
So I sort of don't know what to give this, because, like, as a standalone episode of television, it's definitely better, but as, like, a conclusion, it's really kind of nonsensical. Like, I don't think it fits thematically with anything they were setting up.
I liked it. I'm just gonna give it a B+.
Okay. I'm certainly not gonna give it a B+. Yeah, I'll give it a B-.
Okay.
Because I don't... Yeah.
I got you.
I mean, it's just not...
No, I know.
It's like if you watched... You know, if you watch a cut of Uwe Boll's Seed and the last scene is the last scene from Citizen Kane, like, does that make Seed better? No. Because it's not from Seed. Like, what?
Yeah, that's a decent comparison.
And that was that was.
Yes, it was.
This has been Welcome to the NHK. You know, I don't... Really, nothing about this show worked for me, substantially.
Right.
I think all of the stuff about it that could have proved interesting about the character is just not met with enough. I feel like maybe the writers just didn't care enough about the specifics of his disorder. They certainly didn't care enough about following through with the ramifications.
Yeah, just inconsistent character writing, and just too many tired social criticisms.
Yeah, between the hentai otaku stuff and the MMO stuff, and
even
the pyramid scheme stuff, which wasn't
as bad.
It wasn't as bad, but they somehow found a way to make it about as tired as the rest of it, just not in a way that was, like, super frustrating.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think the way they handle the female characters is largely pretty awful. The two of them that do exist don't really have much personality unto themselves, and especially when you conflate that with how much of the show, especially in the early going, is just those two dudes sitting talking trash about women. It kind of makes, like, if you consider, like, Nanako, like, the way she exits, and then just the way Hitomi and Misaki are for most of it, I think it's really gross and rough.
In that regard. It certainly, you know, it doesn't exactly, because it would seem to be, you know, it would seem to, like, criticize as, you know, the hentai stuff, and then it, like...
Yeah, but then it doesn't...
It doesn't really, like, back it up with, like, female characters that are, like, written...
That have any dimension.
That have their own, like, agency.
It seemed for a while there as if they were, like, trying... That was the point, that, like, oh... The Misaki is, like, the heroine of the hentai game, but that didn't really go anywhere. And calling attention to the fact that you've written a one-dimensional female character doesn't excuse it, also. Yeah. So, yeah, just all in all, Yamazaki, once again, repulsive character. Like, really, really hard for me to deal with him throughout this show. And, yeah, Sato just is not... The worst thing I feel like I can say about it is that for a show that's about what it's like to sort of feel trapped and depressed, really doesn't feel like either of those things ever in a tonal sense.
It tries for the sort of broad comedy too much.
Yeah, and at its best, like, dramatic moments, like, it doesn't feel like that. Like, the last episode of this show, most of it, I would say, doesn't even especially feel like I'm trapped inside his head.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it is just kind of straightforward melodrama, which it can generally do a little more competently than the broad comedy stuff, but it's just like, if I think about, like, the great shows and great things, like, in art, like, if it's a character study, and if it's about a character behaving and feeling a certain way, a lot of the battle is trying to get the audience from a third-person spectator view sort of into whatever it is you think that character's feeling. There's something NGE does extremely well, among other stuff. This show just does not... It never feels that intense or dire or anything.
Which it probably should.
It probably should.
Clinical depression.
Yeah, maybe it should. So that's why I'm going to give Welcome to the NHK. Well, did I give it more C's or D's? This will be the test.
Let's see. You gave it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 grades that weren't D's, and a couple of those were B's. So
okay, I'll give it a C-.
Okay, I'll give it a C.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't really I can't really quantify it, but the show occasionally works for me on just sort of like a base emotional level, but I can't really.
Yeah, sure. That's
quantify. Fine. I think it does when it wants to, like, tone down the broad comedy stuff. I think some of the more quiet introspective, they're not that introspective. Some of the more quiet scenes are I think, closer to what I wanted.
Sure.
I think they're... It can be... It's okay at those parts. It's definitely not a success. Okay. I wouldn't call it a success.
Well, that's all. Thanks for joining me, Matthew.
Thanks for joining me,
Evan. Tune in next week, you guys, for some more X-Files.
Hell yeah.
Peace!